You're listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America.
On today's episode, our topic is Jay-Z.
Here we go.
Working at Nike, Jay-Z was during the early 2000s, was probably like a poster child for Nike, but without any relationship to the brand, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. No, absolutely. So he and Damon Dash really together, both of them, I don't think I ever really sent product for one without sending it for the other. Mm-hmm. And they were really committed to the Air Force One product. All white, right? And they all only wanted white Air Force Ones, high tops, low tops, the whole nine. And it's interesting because that literally was the hardest product within the brand to get mm-hmm. our hands on.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, it was low tops. I found out the hard way, which we'll talk, that it was actually only low tops that they
wanted. It was only the low tops?
Yes.
Okay, girl, you know, it was a million years ago, so my memory is not always good. Then that made it even harder for me to get it then.
Yes.
So that underscores my point. But yeah, so we did have a relationship with him and with his record company representatives at the time, and just some very interesting things that ensued. Mm-hmm. And you're right, at the time he did not have a monetary relationship with the brand. And I do think that was a real sour point for them, because mm-hmm. they understood what they were bringing to the brand, but they also really loved the product.
Yeah.
And I don't think the Nike brand was at the place where they were able to or committed to doing relationships with anybody. And by relationships, I mean monetary deals mm-hmm. with anybody who wasn't an athlete. And of course, we know today that has shifted to some degree, I'll say, to some degree. So,
and I will say this, that I mean, Jay-Z really very early on, and maybe it's just because he was a business person, whatever the business may have been, before he got into the entertainment industry, that he looked at every kind of relationship as a business relationship. So he saw very early on what he brought to the table, mm-hmm. how his brand could impact a brand. Whereas other artists were just like happy to get free stuff, he was like, no, I should be getting paid. Rightly so. I mean, yeah. I just don't disagree with him on that. But it just wasn't something that Nike was willing to do at the time. So that kind of was a bit of a clash. And that kind of mm-hmm. is where I'll start some of the stories, right? So one particular story I will say was Jay-Z and NBA All-Star 2000. Okay, wow, 20 years. Time is like flying, good Lord. So I just started at Nike. I took over your role as music marketing manager. And I think I started in August. And of course, I became the point person for the artists, the labels, the stylists, whoever was in music to call with their request for Nike, things like that. So when Jay-Z's team found out there was like a new Nike person, I could tell they were like, maybe now this new person could help us get the deal that we're looking for, since the other lady never helped us.
Right, because it was all in my power to do.
Exactly.
And I just had some ulterior motive for not doing it. Meanwhile, being completely in the middle of it, having the conversations on a corporate level, like, this makes sense. This is what he wants to do. You know, these are all how many presentations I've had to put together, mm-hmm. how many conversations I've had on corporate, and then them saying, no, it's their brand. They can do what they want to do with it, right?
Yeah.
And then being sandwiched in the middle with him feeling like, you're not getting a deal.
Right.
So, but anyway, but go ahead. I want to hear this juicy story.
Yeah. So, okay. So somebody from his staff, they always had something they were working on. They were trying to get sponsorship from Nike. So it happened to be an NBA All-Star party that they were planning to do. It was going to be in San Francisco. And they wanted to see how Nike could be a sponsor. We had our typical answer that we gave everybody. No, we don't sponsor. No, we're not giving money. No, you can't put our logo on your flyer, right? So it was typical. And they were like, they weren't really taking no. I can't even remember who it was on the team. And they were just like, they weren't taking no. Now, on the internal side, we were talking about what we were going to be doing for a new product that was coming out, which was called Presto. You remember Presto?
My gosh, yes.
So, I mean, which was not a basketball sneaker or anything, but every department within the brand had to kind of contribute what they were going to do to help promote the new product. And so I just thought, I'm always thinking, like, how could I get a million celebrities at one time to, like, wear the product or have the product versus the one-offs that we typically did. So I was like, well, maybe this party could possibly be a way for us to introduce Presto to the entertainment community, right? So I was just trying to like figure out how we might be able to fuse the two together. Now, from the brand perspective, it didn't really make a lot of sense because Presto is not a basketball shoe, and to launch it or, you know, highlight it during NBA All-Star Weekend from a brand perspective seemed a little strange. But I talked to you about it. I know it's 20 years ago, girl, so I'm not expecting you to remember that. But you were like, okay, all right, why not? And then, you know, we talked to the director, Pam, about it. And I don't know if she had to talk to other people. No, she definitely had to talk to other people.
Oh, my gosh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
In terms of, like, the basketball team and heads of marketing, right, just all these people who miraculously, because we had never done anything like this before. Like, Nike had never thrown a party during All-Star Weekend, like, ever. Just mm-hmm. as big as it is, this is just not something that the brand had done. It had not kind of did a lot of lifestyle-driven experiences, right? So this was, like, a big decision for the brand to do, right? So look, I'm a newbie. I'm like at Nike for a couple of months and I'm like, okay, we're gonna do this thing. And I'm like, okay, Jay-Z, guys, we're not sponsoring. We're not gonna write a check, but what we can do is we have a Nike Town store in San Francisco. It's a space that we own. Cause I think that's one of the things, like Nike never wanted to just kind of get lost in the sauce of some event and not being able to stand out and like let the brand shine. So I think that was an issue. And so when I came up with the idea, like, let's do it at Nike Town. I mean, you can't get more Nike than that. I'm like, guys, I can provide you with the space. I can, you know, pay for all the things for the party. You guys just have to show up and you can say it's the Nike Jay-Z party. And they kind of went and then they came back and they were like, okay. And so here we are, we got a party, the Nike, Jay-Z, or Rockefeller, whatever, NBA All-Star party. So we're set. Then what happens? I need to like check the dates on this, right? But somehow in like, I'm gonna say October, November, I'm gonna find out the exact date, Jay-Z gets involved in an incident, a big incident. A stabbing incident, okay? This like notorious incident where he stabbed Biggie's former manager. I'm not really sure what the discussion was about, if he did it, didn't, I don't know. He stabbed this guy. Now, from a brand side, our job is to protect the brand at all costs, right? So this is horrible. There's no way you or Pam could be on campus talking about we're having a party with this guy who's all over the news for stabbing someone. And I'm like, God, this is a disaster. Like, we got all these green lights, but now, and I had to call them and I'm like, guys, this is dead. Like, we can't do the party with you. I tried, but it's not gonna happen. But that being said, like, we had Nike Town, we had everything, we had the catering, we had everything set up because All-Star Weekend is coming up in like a month or two. So it's coming up. And so I didn't want to like just kill the whole idea because we might never get this kind of opportunity again. So I went over to Def Jam offices and I talked to Kevin Lyles about it, who was the president at the time. And I was like, hey, listen, this is the situation. And this is like a no-brainer for any company. Like, wait, you're paying for the party. All I got to do is bring my dumpsters. Like, just bring all your Def Jam artists. I'm good. We're bringing athletes. We got the space. We got the drinks. We got the DJ. Like, we have everything. We just need to collaborate to make it like a really cool vibe. So he was like, no problem. And it became, instead of the Jay-Z Rockefeller Nike All-Star Party, it became the Nike Def Jam party. You remember that party, Nikita?
Oh my gosh, first of all, so you shared so many juicy little tidbits. That was probably one of the most epic parties we ever threw. And there's a sidebar to that whole thing too, because so many celebrities could not even get into the party. Like, I remember being on the inside of the party, it was all glass, and just people pushing against the glass trying to get in. I saw LL Cool J outside the party trying to get in. I mean, just so many people who get, and we had started telling people, like, listen, we understand how in the entertainment industry it's good to be fashionably late and you want to walk in with all eyes on you, but this is not the day. This is not the time. This is not the place. You need to get here, and you need to get here early. So it was just a madhouse, and everybody wanted to get in. I think this Nike Town was three floors, right? Was it three stories?
Yeah, three, but you know pretty much all of them are. Yeah, I feel like it was like three or four stories.
And it was packed on every level. I mean, this party was epic, but here's a couple things. One, I had a Bay Area rapper, which that could be anybody, right? A Bay Area rapper. His person is at the door, and I'm at the door. Just imagine, like,
I remember Black you were at the door the whole night or something.
It was the night, yeah. Just, and I don't know why. Like, in like that's party number one. Party rule 101. Get away from the door. But for some reason, I'm at the door. Plus, I wanted my people to be able to get in,
right,
too. And
yes.
Sometimes you got to make calls because we were at capacity, but you know what that means, at capacity. Mm-hmm. So I needed to be able to get the right people in. So this one Bay Area rapper's person comes up to me. This whole entire thing, there's so many lessons in here that I want to unpack a couple of them, but this is one very interesting thing. Because you have to make, in business, right, you have to be able to make snap decisions. And in an instance, you have to sometimes be able to run all these scenarios through your mind and then come out with the right answer, even if it seems counterintuitive. So this guy comes to the door. I have a little crack in the door, right? He's like, listen, I have such and such out here, and they want to get into this party more than anything. If you do not let him in this party, we all pack it, and we're going to light this whole outside up.
Oh, my God.
Oh, please God. Don't let me shoot people outside. So I had to make a decision to let them in.
Oh,
and so, and this is a famous person. So I let them in knowing that they all are carrying, but that was a choice I had to make. Because what I knew that they didn't come here to start a problem.
Right.
And I knew that they just wanted to get in and party and have a good time. Like but what person in their right mind would be like, okay, why don't you and all your entourage and all your weapons come on in my party? That's packed this capacity with every major superstar.
Basketball and entertainment.
An athlete that you could possibly imagine. So my whole heart that night is just, let's just follow these people wherever they go and make sure that nothing escalates. So at that point, I got off the door. So that's one thing. Mm-hmm. But that I thought that was very interesting. Mm-hmm. And nothing happened. It was fine. You know, sometimes you just have to know your audience, right?
Yeah.
The second thing that I love about this story and that I think could be very helpful, especially for people interested in marketing and interested in understanding how businesses on this level make certain decisions. So yeah, Presto was not a basketball product, but here's the interesting thing about Presto, whether you remember it or not, it was 10 years in the making. Mm-hmm. Like Presto, they had been working on Presto for literally 10 years and they had really finally decided that it was right to come into the marketplace. And when it did, it was huge. It was massive. And so our argument to get the product debuted and displayed at NBA All-Star Weekend, which is all about innovation. Like there's nothing more innovative than NBA and NBA players and nothing more innovative than a Nike Town. I mean, if you've ever been inside of a Nike Town, that's a whole experience in and of itself. Mm-hmm. And so that's the thing that people have to realize, like, don't just think that because something may not make sense on the surface, that if you truly believe in it, you can't make a case for it. And that's one thing that I really did learn at Nike and that was told to me early on is two things. One is that innovation has to be the key. Mm-hmm. And two, there's always money for a good idea.
Yeah.
And so those are two things that anybody can use today to help push their business or their brand forward. The other thing that I think is really interesting is that we had also, Muhammad, I don't know if you remember this or not, but we had a brand mandate to help create excitement and buzz around Nike towns and local communities. Because remember, at the time, they were more like tourist destinations.
Right.
If you were somebody living in New York, if you were living in Chicago, if you lived in LA, for instance, people were not going to Beverly Hills to go to Nike town to buy a pair of sneakers. They were going to Foot Locker, Foot Action, little trendy boutiques, but nobody was going, even though Nike town was spectacular.
Yeah.
And so we did have a really heavy mandate and task to bring some relevance to the sexy of Nike town, to get people in the doors. So that's the other thing that we were looking to do. So that was number two. So this whole thing was very strategic. And that's another thing that I don't think people really realize about this role, and maybe roles like this at other companies, is that it's not all just fun and games. Like, there's a lot of strategy involved. And so I think that was the other piece. So Presto was number one, but number two was driving people to Nike town. And number three was our always job, is getting people really connected to the brand. And so you had a really cool idea, leveraging a partnership first with Jay-Z that didn't work out, and then with Def Jam. That was simply brilliant. And that's the other thing about negotiations, right? It has to win-win-win. We got something, they got something, and it was just, and I think too, for you, like, one thing that I want to say as well is that you are like the queen of pivot. And that too is another quality that people need if they're wanting to go into marketing, if they want to go in entertainment and business in general, corporate America in general. Yeah. But your initial idea may get beat up, stripped down. It may be barely alive. But if you really believe in it, you have got to find a way to put on life support and then help it to make a full recovery. And that's what you did. You could have just walked away when the Jay-Z thing didn't happen and just said, oh, well, hunch shoulders. And so many people do that.
That was my first Jay-Z team interaction. And I would say, like, that time, I wasn't dealing with Jay-Z really himself. I was dealing with his people. So we tried. It didn't go well. I mean, it happens. But you had an interesting Jay-Z story when you were running music. What happened?
So, yeah, very interesting story. I remember this like it was yesterday, because I had just gotten engaged earlier in the day. This must have been sometime in 98 or 99. And I had gone down to my garage, about to hop in my little sports car and go out with some of my friends who had come to town, and we were going to go celebrate. And I get a call on my phone, and it is a record company rep. And she's like, oh, I have Jay-Z, wants to talk to you. And I'm like, oh, okay. And he is going off on me because he's on set. He's on set on some kind of music video. It wasn't his video. It was another video. Maybe he was making an appearance on the video. And one of the kids had a pair of Nikes that he'd never seen before. And obviously this is someone who's not as popular as he was. And he went off. He didn't understand why this person had these shoes that he'd never seen before. Now, mind you, again, we're talking about the behind the scenes of working within the sneaker industry. There are so many people who have varying degrees of jobs relating to product within the sneaker business. And so I don't know, did he get those shoes specially made for him by someone who, although it's not their job to work in entertainment, but because perhaps they really don't have another way into these relationships, they leverage it for that purpose, even if it undermines us. So maybe somebody pulled something off a production line. Maybe somebody made something special for him. I have no idea what even shoes he's talking about. He's so mad. And so he's like, you're not doing your job because I should have everything that before it even comes out. And I'm like, I have no idea what you're even talking about. And so if you know me, I mean, I can be nice as ever, but if you want to go there, we can also go there. And it really does not matter who you are. Because I think from my perspective, I just see everybody as human, and I don't really have a fanatical type personality where I'm a fan of this person or a fan of that person. I'm just a fan of humanity. And if we are here to do business, or if we're here to...
All entertainers matter.
Oh, that's really good because there's a Jay-Z story around that too.
Oh God, yeah, we gonna hold that one.
Before we get off, we need to talk about that. But anyway, so long story longer. He is mad at me and I tell him whatever I have to say to him. And so now mind you, this is sort of flanked by what you said earlier in that he really wanted a Nike deal and perhaps felt like I wasn't doing enough to get him this deal because somehow in his mind, I had that kind of authority. Maybe he thought I was Phil Knight in disguise. and so I said, well, let me find out what's going on. I'll, you know, see what we can do. But it was a Saturday and he was already on set. So I don't have any kind of factory in my backyard or basement. So he wasn't going to get these shoes today. So he said, well, you know, Nikita, there are a whole lot of things that rhyme with Reebok. And I said, oh, really? Like what? So he just takes off rhyming, like won't stop, like we hot, like, you know, just all of these things. Right? So I'm on the phone with him. Mind you, I'm in tears, right? So we can talk about that. But I'm not letting him see that it's like the silent cry where the tears are just coming down your face, but you're not saying anything. You're not like whimpering audibly.
Right.
So he's just going off about, I'll just do a deal with Reebok because a whole lot of things that rhyme with Reebok. And I was like, well, people have to do what they have to do. I don't have nothing to do with me. And this is so ridiculous. I mean, and I said to him, like, every time you and Dame call me and ask me for unlimited amount of sneakers that I can barely, not even Nikita, but the brand can barely get their hands on, because you only want to wear this pair of all white Air Force Ones once. And once you've worn them one time, you don't want to wear them again. So you need truckloads of
that was just weird anyway.
That we can barely get our hands on, right? And so that's my Jay-Z story and how my engagement was ruined. And you know what, too? This, I've never shared this with maybe people in my inner circle. I've never really said this, but I do think it's important because it will probably help somebody. In that moment, I did not want to work in entertainment anymore. Mm-hmm. I did not want to work at Nike anymore. I did not want to work in an industry where we empowered people to behave badly because of some sort of runoff effect that we would get from the marketing aspect of it. You know, in my mind, I'm like, are we really creating people who have reached the height of their career and would sort of have this stance or take this stance, like without even listening to reason? Here I am. And again, I'm working in corporate America. So this podcast is about that too. And we haven't even touched the iceberg on what we were facing day to day as women, as Black women, as young women too, because there is ageism, I think, involved in why people have a hard time in corporate America. Mm-hmm. So dealing with that, I told you another piece of this problem was people within the brand who should have been really allies for us, but were wanting their own selfish glory from working with celebrities, although it's not your job. So they were undermining. And then on the talent side, I was having, and I never have had that problem with anybody on the celebrity side. This was the one and only time, but it was the, so now look at me, like how emotionally immature was I, which I really encourage young executives to invest in their own mental and emotional health, because if you do not, the industry will literally eat you up and throw you out. So why would I be even thinking about throwing away my career because I'm having a really terse encounter with someone who's been completely unreasonable? But I did. And it was one of the reasons that I was like, you know what? I don't wanna work in a business where we're empowering people.
And not only that, I think you are kind of like a perfectionist, you know what I mean? And because you put out so much at such a high quality, like, it's rare that people don't appreciate that. And so probably in your high achievement, we're going to say that, high achiever state, you're probably like, how dare he not be happy with me as much as I do? Because everybody loves you and everything.
But I think, yeah, right. Like, everybody, yeah. And so
everybody loves Nikita, damn it.
And so I think that was a part of it. But that point is so well taken, because that's what I mean. If I had been emotionally stable enough, mm-hmm. Right. If I had been mature enough to say, this person is telling me something about themselves. Mm-hmm. This has nothing to do with me. Like, why am I trying to justify it? You're there. Somebody has something that you don't have. Would you give me the opportunity to try to make it right for you? No, you just want to ruin my day. Okay. But then why did I take that on?
Right.
Why did I take on that burden? So anyway, enough about my sad Jay-Z story.
And at the end of the day, it's like Iverson on that like famous video. He was like, we talking about practice. Like, we're talking about sneakers. Okay? Tennis shoes. Like, dude, it's so not that serious. So
it is not. So I hope this, maybe somebody might be going through something right now where they're having a really overreaction to something, mm-hmm. that they can just stop, take a step back, take a deep breath. And 9 times out of 10, it's probably not you.
Let me just say, I felt like more than probably any other artist at that time, like Jay-Z really was like repping for Nike. And for him not to have any kind of deal with us, I just felt bad. I mean, at the end of the day, I was a young Black person, so I felt an alliance to the artist. I have more in common with them than I do with the brand, right? So mm-hmm. I'm always, as much as I can, looking at ways how to support them and help them get what they need or whatever.
And let's be clear, it would have made the brand more money too.
Right.
I mean, this is not just an emotional thing, like you should have it because he wants it. It also just made incredible business sense on so many levels. But anyway, go ahead. Because he was affecting the bottom line, wouldn't you say?
Yes. So, I mean, he knew that, we knew that, but it just, we couldn't do anything about it. So again, they just would always keep trying. So like with the, we talked about the Air Force One. So the way that they put them out on the market, they didn't want to kind of like lessen the appeal of the shoe. So there would be times that you literally could not find Air Force Ones like in the stores. It was like how they were doing in the drug world, like
supply and demand.
Right, supply and demand, like keep a drought, mm-hmm. right? And so it was to the point like artists would go to like 20 stores in a city and nobody would have Air Force Ones. They wouldn't have Air Force Ones because Nike were not making them or supplying them with the shoes. So they were like, listen, you know how much, you know, Jay-Z and his people were like, listen, you know how much he loves Air Force Ones. We want to buy them. It's not like we don't, you know, we want them for free. The amount that we want, we just want to buy them. But then we can't go to any store and buy them. How can you guys help us? So I went to Sam Siegel.
Oh,
you remember him?
Oh yeah, in New York.
He was in charge of like limited edition product, something like that. He was maybe like a New York sales director or something, but he was in charge of all like this specialty product and things like that. And I'm like, listen, Sam, like, how can I get these guys some shoes? Can we just make a special order in China or wherever we're making these shoes and get these guys the shoes? They just like, can I just order like 100 pair or something? And he went to talk about it. Well, whoever he needed to talk about, he came back and he was like, okay, I'm going to do it. And I'm like, what? Oh my God. So I'm thinking, again, I'm finally going to come through for Jay-Z and like come through with something. And girl. So like they're literally making them in the factory, right? So it takes, I don't know, a few weeks for this order to go in, to get done. Maybe we did like 100 pair, 150 pair. I'm not really sure, something like that. And I don't know if they were going to buy them or give them, I don't know, probably we're going to give them away or something to them. So a few weeks came, girl, these boxes come in. I'm so happy. I'm like, guys, the shoes are in. Send them over. They open them up. They call me and they're like, Jay-Z wears lows. These are mids. I'm like,
Mahamada.
Like, oh my God. I'm like, I give up. I'm like, send the shoes back. I think they sent them back or something. Like, yeah, they like, yeah. And I was like, Lord, I cannot believe, we just cannot win with this man. It is not meant to be for him to do a deal or do anything.
At least not on our watch.
I mean, mm-hmm. I just couldn't believe, like, they were just, like, the wrong shoe. Like, he's like, he doesn't wear highs or mids,
so whatever. You didn't know that he didn't wear mids, or you didn't realize that they would be mids. Which one?
Yeah, I think that when we placed the order, like we just didn't realize that it was Lowe's only or something like that. Because, you know, there was Air Force One high tops, there was Air Force One mid, and then there were Air Force One Lowe's. So the ones that he liked was Air Force One low only. Okay, like, yeah. So that was, it was like just another.
That is such a difficult feat. Let me just say,
trying to
get a special order of anything, B, working with our international partners to get the shoes made from scratch, C, get them through customs, and D, have them land on your doorstep.
Yes. Yeah. But this is like, I mean, these are things that even the artists they don't even know the kinds of things that we would do. And in some other episodes, I think we're just going to talk about just things that we did internally to try to like really push for artists to make things happen. And
yeah, I mean, like the time I tried to float the idea, I'm like, listen, if we don't want to do deals with people, then that's fine. If you don't want to dilute your stance of only working with athletes, then maybe we could do one-off deals with people, but let's pay them in stock options. Can you imagine?
Oh my
like, God. Let's not even.
Right. That would have been That would have been huge.
This is 25 years ago.
That was our like Jay-Z story. As much as Jay-Z loved Nike, I definitely think that people are going to use this term clout chase, but he wanted to be the one to be like, yeah, I'm the first artist to get like a Nike deal. I'm sure he wanted to say, to be the one to be able to say that, even though he loved the brand.
Yeah.
And he went on to do, he did do that Reebok deal.
He did the Reebok deal, and he also had a very successful line with Rockefeller and Rockaware so that he could, whether he owned the brand outright or whether it was a licensing deal, I'm not privy to all the particulars of how that deal went. But I do think, again, another really great example of how if someone doesn't want to let you play, then you can just go on and create your own toys, your own playground, make your own rules, and make it happen for yourself. But interesting thing about the Reebok deal, interesting thing, still wore Nike.
I know, because at the end of the day, he loved the brand. He loved that product.
So get your money. Get your money. I'm not mad at you at all. But, you know, people, you just love what you love, right? So
Right.
I'm so glad we were able to have this conversation, just sharing some of our little tidbits about our time within the sneaker industry and the entertainment industry and in corporate America. And hopefully, you know, giving people some of the inside scoop and behind the scenes, but more importantly, maybe people seeing themselves in some of these stories and being able to maybe even in some of the comments or through our website at some point, be able to share out some of their stories as well. Because I do think there's power in storytelling. So thanks so much for having this conversation with me. Anything that people can maybe look forward to on the next episode of Sneaker Stories?
Yeah, we got some really amazing experiences with, you know, people like Diddy, Madonna, Elton John. I mean, we have so many stories that like we had to really just kind of like figure out which stories we're gonna tell.
Thanks for listening to The Soul Chronicles, the podcast navigating life and times in the sneaker industry, Hollywood, and corporate America. Be sure to join us for another exciting episode.